Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So again, you know, you look at what's going on in our society, and this year's been like the year of the fires. Right now, the Caldor Fire, which is only 10 days old, evidently has engulfed 123,000 acres, taken out 632 structures, including more than 450 homes. You didn't hear about it until it is now barreling down to Lake Tahoe, where the rich people have their homes. Now, according to the report, it is the nation's number one firefighting priority. Before, we didn't know much about it. It's going after the rich people's houses. Now it's a priority. And this is my problem. Look, I think that all these things are a priority. Maybe we should be doing something to help, stop this stuff from happening as often. Maybe something with our climate. Maybe, just a thought. But when it affects our heavy hitters, then we care. Which is why I think it's important to talk about this most recent report that's out saying that our billionaire class got just a little bit richer last year over the pandemic. And here to share some thoughts on just how rich they got, I've asked Chuck Collins to come talk with us. Chuck is the director of the program on inequality and the common good at the Institute for Policy Studies. Chuck, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, good to be with you.
So I'm looking at this fire and I'm going, you know, it didn't seem to matter much. I didn't even hear about it until now it's barreling down on Lake Tahoe. And now we got an emergency, Chuck.
Yeah, the mansions are at risk. The luxury housing went, you know, and that's often the case with these disasters. And rural areas are getting, facing huge fires right now, impoverished rural areas. But now we're seeing the second homes are starting to get hit.
And you know, never mind the trailer parks where people actually have to live, but these places that were probably abandoned anyway, now it's a priority. And again, this isn't new. This has been something that's going on in this country for years and years and years, because one, our media is owned by large corporations who probably have properties in places like that, and two, our laws are set up in a way to benefit the wealthy. And now there's this report out by the folks at Americans for Tax Fairness, who have said that our billionaire class, our 700 plus, saw their wealth go up by 62% during this pandemic, up $1.8 trillion. That is just obscene, Chuck.
Yeah, and I think that what makes it obscene is juxtapose, 86 million people have lost their jobs. Some of them have gotten their jobs back. But think of the disruption over the last 17 months. 38 million people have gotten sick. 625,000 people have died. I mean, this is, if we were going to be sitting up and saying emergency, let's really make investments to sort of lift up and help everybody, this would be the moment. And we're on the verge of that. I kind of think there's an opportunity in the next 2 months to really meaningfully shift the priorities in this country.
No, it's something we have to do.
We're a conservative country, and we have these periodic moments where the window opens up, whether it's 1935, 36, or 1964 or something like that. This is one of those windows where we could actually shift the trajectory for the next couple decades.
Yeah, see, I don't buy the "we're a conservative country" argument. I've had a lot of people tell me, no, Rick, we're a conservative country. No, I don't think so. I think we're a manipulated country. I think we've been sold on the idea. Because when you start talking to people about smart investments, the kind of thing that are in this $3.5 trillion infrastructure bill that the House just passed, getting seniors access to hearing and dental and vision in Medicare, extending opportunities for kids to go to college, all of the social infrastructure things, when you start talking about those as common good and as the benefit for average everyday working people, it doesn't matter the political stripe. People go, yeah, we should be investing in this. But I always come back to, how do we pay for it? I look at this report, Chuck, and I go, this is how we pay for it.
Absolutely. No, and I agree with you. I think these are incredibly popular policies. I should say we have these periodic windows where government isn't completely captured by the corporate interests, where people can put, where we can push some policies through. And I think, for instance, people really know the rich are not paying their fair share, that these billionaires, most of these, this $1.8 trillion gain that you've mentioned will not be subject to tax. These are capital gains or their gains in their estates. I just wrote a book about how the rich hide their money. So a lot of this money will go offshore or go into anonymous shell companies and the like, it won't even be reached in terms of taxes. No. But I think there's a huge popular moment for making sure the rich pay their fair share, not just paying higher income taxes, but paying taxes on gains in capital, gain earnings from wealth, and even wealth, some forms of wealth taxes. These are all really popular ideas, which is, you know, so if the politicians follow the people, they should be implementing these ideas.
No, absolutely. And look, I'm not against people being wealthy. I'm not. In fact, you know, there's always, you know, hopefully someday I become wealthy. Probably not going to happen, but it would be nice. I'm not against it. But this is one of those moments where there's so much need in this country that you go where the money is. I mean, if I look at this $1.8 trillion increase in wealth of just these people that you could fit in a good sized room, and the mass suffering, the mass evictions that are coming down the road, the number of people who've lost their jobs. Florida has been kicking people off the unemployment rolls for months now. I look at, there's so much that we need to be doing. This to me sounds like just the time for a pandemic tax to go, you know, all of those gains you got just during the pandemic, we should be taxing those at a really high rate, and it wouldn't hurt these folks at all.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, well, you know, at different points, people have proposed an emergency pandemic wealth tax. Let's think about that. $1.8 trillion. Congress right now is debating, you know, a $3.5 trillion spending bill. You could have the billionaire gains cover half of that. You could still give every one of those billionaires, give them $10 million or for the pandemic. You know, their wealth has gone up during the pandemic. Here's $10 million for each of you. Now that leaves the rest of us, you know, $1.7 trillion to invest in addressing the urgent needs in our country.
Yep.
They're not going to suffer. They're not going to go hungry or missing anything.
And the rest of that should come from corporate taxes. It's a crime that these massive corporations who have done so well have not given their employees raises, and in fact, at every turn have blocked them from being able to unionize, to be able to fight for better wages, hours, and conditions. It's time we go back and we tax them as well, and that's how we get the other $1.7 trillion investment money, because we've given so much away that we've created these extremely wealthy people and corporations through our sacrifice. And it's about time we go, it's time for the tables to turn.
Yeah, and these are the most profitable global companies in the world, some of them. Back in the 50s and 60s, a third of national revenue came from the corporate income tax. And now it's like 5% or something ridiculous.
Yep.
And these same companies that are playing shell games around the world, hugely profitable, not paying their fair share. And I think you're right. Between the huge wealth surging to these 700 billionaires, and just take a couple hundred of these global companies that have reaped benefits, have been pandemic profiteers, really, tax them, ask them to pay their fair share. We've paid the bills. We don't have to add to any kind of debt. We can make these investments that everybody knows we need to make.
Absolutely. And this is where, when I talk to my Trump supporters, because my Trump supporters, you know, they love to go, we need to make America great again. And I usually ask, well, when were we last great? When do you think we were great if you want to make us great again? And invariably, most people point back to the golden era of the economy, the 1950s and 60s, where we had, you know, 35% of workers in unions making good family-sustaining wages, where a family could actually exist and thrive on one income. And you could send the kids to college and take vacations and buy new cars and do all those things on one income. That's when they point back to. And I say, you know, we can do that again. It's just a matter of the right policies. We undid all of that with bad policy. We can redo that again.
Yeah, I mean, that formula, that time that some people remember, we taxed wealth at high levels. We taxed corporate profits. We, not in a confiscatory way. We, you know, people made money. They got wealthy. But we raised revenue, and we made public investments in to help first-time home buyers, to help people go to college or get the skills they needed, to build infrastructure, to build highways and other forms of infrastructure. We taxed the wealthy. We made investments that made the economy work for everybody, not just the wealthy.
Yeah.
And lots of people got on the wealth-building train as a result of those investments.
No,
So
you.
we know how to do it. It's not like we don't even have to look over to Europe or anywhere. We know how to do that here in the United States.
And we can all, I think all of us can look to our family. We can look to our grandparents who, my grandparents, when they got married, they were living in their car. And because of the job that they got, my grandfather got a good union job. They were able to move and live a solidly middle class existence, and with retirement security and all this, but it was because of one, the good union job, and two, government intervention. They bought their first and their second home with VA loans that were heavily subsidized because of the GI Bill, and that's how a whole generation was able to build wealth because of government action. There's been for 40 years this hatred of government and this training of us to anytime we hear of government action to foam at the mouth like Pavlovian dogs, at some point, and I think that point is now, we got to push back on that.
Yeah, I actually think we're turning a corner. I think people recognize, you can't. None of us are going to figure this out alone. We're not going to reverse these this eroding standard of living by everybody just going out and getting reskilled or something like that. We need to make these kind of huge investments that we've done in previous generations that have boosted the economy. And part we need to retrofit every old leaky energy inefficient building. We need to build green infrastructure, jobs that will pay well and actually help position us for the future economy, clean energy economy. All the pieces are there. We
Right.
are I can smell it. It's like so close. It's so possible. But we can't fall asleep the next 2 months. We have to be kind of extremely vigilant. We have to be holding our politicians' feet and other parts of their body to the fire and keep the pressure on. We really have this, really the fate of these two pieces of legislation, this infrastructure bill and this other public spending bill, $3.5 trillion, really hinges on between now and probably Halloween.
Yeah, I
And
mean, we need the investment desperately, and again, I go back to my Trump supporter friends who go, that era in the 1950s was the golden age, and I say, yeah, because we again had this massive investment. The interstate highway system was built back then because we had the resources to do it, and it created jobs and opportunities all across this country, not just for working people, but for business as well. So smart investment, and in our country and in our economy is not just good for me and working class people, but for business owners and entrepreneurs and the future entrepreneurs.
Yeah. And it was really a time of the rising tide really lifted all boats. I mean, real wages for the bottom fifth and the middle fifth all doubled over 30 years. Yeah, I mean, in some ways I understand why people look back on that period. I grew up in Detroit, where we were a UAW town, and you could see a middle class standard of living emerging all around me, in whole neighborhoods of prosperity. And that was a really an important vision. And we sometimes forget a lot of what went wrong was we dismantled those public investments. We reversed that. We stopped taxing the wealthy. We shifted tax obligations onto working class people and middle class people. The rich have basically taken their money and put it in their pocket and hid it in offshore. And they're not participating in these big, bold investments that are going to be so important. So this is our moment. Sometimes I think it's going to be challenging. The wealthy have, for several decades now, they've hired all these wealth advisors to help them kind of game the system. We have to invest in enforcement. I mean, none of us like the Internal Revenue Service, but actually building the capacity of the IRS to follow the money and enforce tax rules on the rich is actually part of how we're going to fix this system, because otherwise they're going to make taxes optional.
Yep. No,
They've
I
got
agree
the
with you.
lawyers and the accountants to do that.
I agree with you. But I've always said, they have all the money. These 700 seem to have all the money. We've out-procreated them. There are more of us. We just have to vote. But I'm looking around the country, and everything they're trying to do is make sure that those of us who are here don't get the vote, especially if you're a certain color or shade, which is why I think the John Lewis Act is so important, and moving forward on voting rights, which they also passed in the House yesterday, which I thought was a good step in the right direction. I got some hopes in the Senate, not a lot, but some. I think that's just as important, though.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we are in a democ our democracy's at risk. and we're at risk from these extreme inequalities and the way in which the economy is not working for most people. So I think, yeah, I think I took yesterday was a really kind of hopeful day. I mean, the House of Representatives, which has been kind of stuck and stalled and fighting among the even Democrats fighting among themselves, really took a couple of bold steps. And I think if the stars line up, and with all of our being engaged, we some remarkable things could happen. But we could have a real Thanksgiving this year, looking back on a fall where we've kind of together come together and said, we want to build an economy that works for everybody. The rich need to pay their fair share, and there's a lot of rich people who understand that and support that, and want to be part of a, you know, reversing these inequalities. So, you know, every ally we can find, we need to bring to the table.
No, it's important. So last question I've got for you, because as you've said, we've got to be hyper vigilant in this moment. You know, what's the line of attack? What should people be doing in your estimation?
Well, you know, what's interesting is we're talking about things that are happening in Washington, but I think most people are not aware. Maybe your listeners are more aware because you're talking about it, but I think we just need to talk to our neighbors and say, do you know what's going on right now? We have an opportunity to push back against a 40-year shrink government, shift taxes off the rich agenda. We can turn the corner on that, and it's going to and government can do big and meaningful things that can improve the quality of our lives and certainly the next generation a lot if we act in the next 2 months. So I think it's talking to our, you know. Yes, I support the voting right, the John Lewis Voting Rights Act. Tell your elected officials to support that. Tell people to support the infrastructure bill. You know, if we need a filibuster to get some of this, you know, need to go outside of filibuster, maybe this is the time in the Senate to let majority rule flourish, and let's make it happen together.
There you go. I'm right there with you, Chuck. I appreciate the time. As always, great talking with you. You guys keep up the great work at the Institute for Policy Studies. I hope folks will check out the website. We'll get links out. But Chuck Collins, I appreciate the time.
Thank you, Rick, as always. Take care.
Thanks so much. Love to hear your thoughts. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Should we be raising taxes on the very well-to-do? Should we be clawing some of that $1.8 trillion back to use in smart ways? I'd love to hear your thoughts. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back after this.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.